Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, May 12, 2024. My name is Melanie C., a recovered compulsive overeater calling in from Canby, Oregon. The share ID numbers for Friday, May 10, 2024 are the following. The 7 a.m. Eastern Time Big Book Study share ID number is 21391, 21,391. And for the 10 a.m. Big Book Study, share ID number is 21390, 21,390. This morning, A Vision for You presents Something's Different, a relapse to recovery story, a personal story, a transformation. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is dedicated to the inspiration and motivation and the miracle of recovering from the disease of alcoholism, and in our case, compulsive overeating. The directions are clearly outlined in the first 164 pages of the Big Book. If we take up such a process, we will be amazed and transformed. We will be restored to sanity and be of maximum service to God and those about us. We will resemble our former selves but little. Each step is found, and the details of utilizing this as a way of living is written in such masterly detail and promise to all. The Big Book states, besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for everyone. And this, all this power-packed in the first part of the Big Book. But how much more amazing, commanding, and compelling to read and hear about hundreds of others that have been recovered as a result of these steps. The Big Book knew that this would be a paramount in wrapping up profound encouragement, but to have personal testimony from those that have recovered to profile the details of their return to health. Well, we all know the advantages of book ending at the end of the book. The Big Book does not disappoint. The book ending is filled with action-packed miracle after miracle. From part one, the pioneers of AA, part two, they stopped in time. They nearly lost it all in part three. Well, we are privileged and honored to have our own end of the story, back of the pages story today of a personal transformation. She has honored us by agreeing to share that very brilliant story of miracle, the very thing. A personal story from rags to riches and humility and in the sort of thing that gives us neutrality around food and changes us back to sanity. From loss and despair to happy, joyous, and free, her story speaks of the familiar path that includes relapse to arrive eventually to complete defeat and surrender. A real genuine back-of-the-book fireworks of celebration of liberation, humbly in service as God has given her a personal story and paying forward what she has been so miraculously transformed to do, praying for each way and each place and each person that comes along. And this can happen to you too. Let me teach you how it happened to me will be a part of her story today. So ladies and gentlemen and esteemed guests and beloved members of our fellowship, it is with great pleasure and deep reverence that I introduce our guest speaker today. In the spirit of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, her story embodies the essence of inspiration, hope, and of the transformative power of recovery. Her journey, like many of ours, has been one of trials and triumphs, setbacks and successes. From the depths of despair and the shackles of addiction, she has emerged recovered, a testament to the promise of redemption that lies within each one of us. This morning, she will share with us her personal odyssey from relapse to recovery, from darkness to light, from the bondage of freedom. Her story is not just one of survival, but of thriving. Not just of overcoming, but of transcending. As we listen to her words, may we find solace in the knowledge that we are not alone and that there is a path to wellness and that recovery is not just a possibility, but a promise. Please join me in welcoming our guest speaker today, whose presentation is entitled, Something Different. A relapse to recovery story. Let us open our hearts and our minds to receive the wisdom and the grace that she so generously offers today. Please welcome to the line this Cheryl S. from Nevada. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you so much for that beautiful, beautiful introduction. I think you summed it up when you said, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And that is the simple, beautiful truth. Okay, let me just start a timer and take a deep breath. And I would like to start with a prayer. Higher power, speak. Speak in the language we can understand. Speak the words and ideas that someone is longing to hear. Shine a light into our dark places. Fill us with hope and peace. Do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Amen. Again, good morning. My name is Cheryl S. I'm from Nevada, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And when I learned to share my story, I was told I'm supposed to say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So that's how I've structured my talk. Let's get started. I'm going to start with a quote from the Big Book on page 18. The ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with the facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. So I just want to start with qualifying so that you know that I am an ex-compulsive overeater. I don't know when I became a compulsive overeater. I don't know if I was born with it. I don't know if something happened. But what I do know is food has always been very, very important in my life. And when I think back to my childhood, most of my memories are associated with food. I think about making Christmas cookies with my grandma and just eating until I was absolutely sick to my stomach, a cookie dough. Sunday dinners at my grandma's. My dad was a good cook, and you know, all the things that he cooked, and coming home from school and having a snack. And if somebody in my family brings up, you know, do you remember this? When I remember it, there's usually a food component that is associated with it. So for as long as I can remember, food has been part of my story. I did not grow up as an overweight child. I was very physically fit. I might have even been hyperactive when I think back. I love being outside. I love exercising. PE was my favorite class in school. I was a gymnast when I was little. And so I didn't suffer the pain that a lot of people suffer by growing up overweight. I had some, I wouldn't say I was spiritually fit, but my family took us to church when we were little. I didn't like it. In fact, I was pretty manipulative even back then because I would get up really early and I would sneak out into the living room, and my grandma usually left us some kind of a treat over the week for the weekend. She lived across the street from us and she babysat us during the week. And so I would get that treat and I would turn on the TV really, really low, and I would watch cartoons until it was too late for us to go to church. And then I'd start making noise and do gymnastics and cause all kinds of trouble in the house. But I tried to manipulate my parents into not going to church. When I look back at it now as an adult, I think maybe they probably didn't set their alarm. So, but of course, it was all about me. I feel like I was a pretty emotionally fit child. My instincts were pretty normal. I had kind of a dysfunctional home. My family, we were alcoholics, but it wasn't violent or anything like that. But I think about the age of 13 is when my instincts began to start to warp out of the, you know, the way that God God created instincts to be. So I suffered in my teenage years with a lot of emotional problems. So my early adulthood, that's when I started to gain weight. And I wasn't as active as I was as a child. And if I wasn't active, my weight went up. If I was active, my weight went down. And about this time, I discovered some other addictions as well. So some people say that there's an addiction gene, you know, that it's hereditary. I don't know. But I do know that underlying it all was the food. It was always the food. But I did really struggle with some other addictions in my early adulthood. I got married. I got divorced. I got remarried. And I started a family. And I joined an organized religion. And then around middle age was when I first discovered recovery. And I started my recovery in a different 12-step program. I just really wasn't in tune with the fact that the food was a problem, because once again, if I was active, which I love to be active, then the weight stayed away, but the eating didn't change. Actually, at one point, I became a group fitness instructor for a couple of gyms, and I taught all different kinds of exercise classes, and I usually taught at least two classes a day, probably 5 days a week. And I thought that, you know, I was in good physical shape, I guess, but my emotional and spiritual shape was just, it was terrible. I felt, even from an early age, a longing, a pulling towards a higher power. There was a friend of mine who was a Catholic, and they had 8 kids, and they went to Mass every week, and I just found that so attractive. And so I've always felt that draw towards a higher power, and for me, that higher power is God. And it talks in the big book in Bill's story about, you know, most of us, you know, we all have that inside of us somewhere. And I certainly did. So I brought God into my day-to-day life after we started our family and I joined a religion. And I was a Catholic. I am a Catholic. And we went to Mass. I took my kids to Mass every week. And they were altar servers, and they sang in the choir, and they did religious education, and I taught religious education. And it was a beautiful thing. And although I can't really say that I had a personal God, I did have a connection with the higher power during those years. But I was certainly not emotionally fit. Even though I had some recovery in those other areas where I was addicted, my character defects were completely unchecked. And it caused me a lot of trouble in my relationships, with particular my mother and my husband. And then the next part is a senior. So I put 55 plus, you know, that's when you start getting the senior discounts. And I'm 66 years old right now. I'm tired. So as a senior, I stopped teaching group fitness. And I had nothing to offset the compulsive overeating. And as a result, I would just watch the scale go up and up and up. And I remember, you know, getting on the scale and just being like, more? There's more weight? Oh my gosh. And because my weight fluctuated throughout the years, that caused a lot of friction in my marriage as well. And a lot of resentment for me towards my husband, because, you know, he wanted a wife that was svelte and beautiful. And there were times when I wasn't, and I resented him as a result of that. One of the things that my husband and I did when we retired was we took up horseback riding. I'd always wanted a horse when I was a kid, and I had a girlfriend that had a horse, and we rode the hooves off that poor little pony all over the place. But when I was in my late 50s, I asked for horseback riding lessons. I wanted to find out if the desire to have a horse was just kind of a childhood fantasy, or if it was something that God truly put on my heart. And I do believe that God puts things on our heart that are part of his plan for us. And so I took horseback riding lessons, and it turned out that that is something that God did put on my heart. And we bought horses, and we moved out of town, and we live on 2.5 acres, a little mini ranch with horses and chickens and dogs and a lot of chores. I moved away from organized religion around that time, and I also developed a lot of fear. My children were grown up. I have 4 children, and my children are in their late 20s and early 30s, and they suffered from, you know, drug addiction and alcoholism and depression. And, you know, failure to launch, I think, would be a good way to sum it up. And I had a lot of fear around that, you know, what was going to happen to them. So that's what it was like. And I'm going to move to what happened. And on page 25 of the big book, it says, "If you are as seriously alcoholic as we believe there is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but 2 alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help." So what happened? I had gone to OA as a result of the other 12-step programs that I had belonged to, probably about 15 years ago. And I had found some recovery in those programs. Back then, they were in person. I did the steps. And there wasn't a lot of, there wasn't the same recovery, let me put it that way, in the rooms that I went to as there are in Vision for You. And I can remember sitting in the meetings and just thinking, oh God, I need something to eat. And there was a grocery store between the meeting and my house, and I couldn't wait to get to the grocery store and get something to eat after the meetings. And sometimes I would just sit in the parking lot and eat it, and I would eat to the point where it was like it felt like it all got balled up in my esophagus, and there was so much pain in my chest. And then there were times during those years where, you know, I had the pink cloud, and I was really involved in the OA groups, and I had a, no pun intended, but a taste of recovery. But what happened about 3 years ago was my second oldest son got engaged, and I went to his engagement party, which was a really big ordeal, and I was so uncomfortable. I was so uncomfortable in the clothes I was wearing. I had a polyester skirt on that had an elastic waist, and I was about 60 pounds overweight, and I hadn't worn high heels for years, and wearing high heels with that amount of weight was agony. And so I took a pair of tennis shoes, and I immediately changed into the tennis shoes. My beloved daughter-in-law has her mother and 2 sisters, and they're very outgoing, fun, gregarious women. And I just felt so unworthy and out of place. And I kept thinking, how am I going to get through this wedding? And they were, they're all drinkers, and my family drinks as well. And of course, I don't drink anymore. And so all I had was the food, you know, to ease the uncomfortableness. And they took pictures of us. We all had, they had pictures taken in this arbor. And my son and daughter-in-law gave me a framed, gave us a framed photo of that picture for Christmas that year. They got engaged in October. And you could see my tennis shoes in the picture. And I was so heavy. And I just thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? And so I was sitting in the bathroom and praying. And God said, go to a meeting. And God heard God say, go to a meeting before. And my first reaction is always, oh, not that. Anything but that. And I don't even know why I think that. But I do, and I love meetings, but I listened. I listened to that voice, and I went to a meeting. I got on the OA.org website, and I found a meeting, and I went to a meeting that afternoon. I listened to, you know, when sponsors introduced themselves. I called a sponsor that night. She had me call her again the next morning. She gave me a food plan to follow. She told me what I could and couldn't eat. She introduced me to the tools of recovery. And I followed that food plan to the T, and I lost weight. The weight came off very quickly. When I, with regard to the tools, I was so defiant. If I had a dollar for every time I thought, you're not the boss of me, I would be rich right now. I just did not want to do them. And I think it's because, and it says in the big book, you know, that we are very an undisciplined lot. And oh, did I ever fight back against those disciplines. I did not want to call people. I did not want to go to meetings. I just didn't want to do any of it. And if I didn't do it, I wouldn't do it. And the bigger problem was I had to tell my sponsor that I didn't do it. And, oh, I had so much resentment towards my sponsor when she would say, you need to do this. And I remember one time I had done a horse show. We did a big horse show about 30 miles away from us. And it was a long weekend, and oh, I was exhausted. And I called her on the way back from the horse show, and I said, could I just not make outreach calls today? I'm just so tired. And she said, no, you have to make your outreach calls. And I was furious. And I made my outreach calls, but I was absolutely furious. And the other thing that would happen was I couldn't stay on the food plan. About every 3 to 6 months, I would relapse. I would go off my food plan, and sometimes it was for a day, sometimes it was for a week, sometimes it's for a month. And the way that I would go off the plan, the way that I would relapse, was also very defiant. I would literally call up my sponsor and tell her, I'm going off. I'm done. I'm going to relapse. And she would say, oh, you don't have to do this. And I would say, nope, I'm doing it. And that's what I would do. And I would think in my head, you know what, I like the way I eat, I get what I eat, I can do this. You know that, and how many times does it tell us that in the big book, those stories? And so I would go off, and one time I, you know, this is it, I'm done, I'm going off, and I did. And I had a meeting at a restaurant that night, and I knew the restaurant well. I knew exactly what I could have to, you know, eat healthy. And I literally ordered dessert. That was my dinner. And it was huge. It came in a goblet. And there were a number of people there that knew, you know, that I was on a food plan. One of them was my neighbor. And so I would take all my food over to her house when they would invite us over to dinner. And I will never forget the look on their faces when my dinner of dessert showed up in this huge goblet, and I just stared them down. I was like, don't you say anything. And there I was, off to the races once again. And I would call the people that I made outreach calls, and I would tell them, that I was out. I was out. And one of the people said to me, and I'll never forget this. She said, "Don't forget you're only one meal away from being abstinent." And that really pierced my heart and really brought the program into my mind. It is just that simple. I'm only one meal away. I'm always only one meal away. So if you're out there and you're struggling, I want you to know you're only one meal away from abstinence. I couldn't understand how I could be abstinent, how I could be doing the tools when I was doing them and still feeling like something was missing. And what I found out was that I had made the food plan and the tools my higher power. There wasn't a lot of work in the big book. I never did the steps this time around because I had to be abstinent to do the step program that was part of this this group in OA, and I could never do it. And I don't even think I wanted to do it. It was part of my defiance. And so I got down to my goal weight. I bought a beautiful Mother of the Bride dress, and we were going to my son's wedding. And about 2 weeks before his wedding, I got the idea that I should be able to eat cake at his wedding. And two of my children are adopted. And the one that was getting married, we had open adoptions. They became open adoptions with our two adopted children. And my son's biological mother is a caterer. And her gift to my son was to do the cake. And she makes these crazy killer cupcakes. And I decided that it just wasn't right, that I couldn't eat her cupcakes at my son's wedding. And by God, I was going to. And so I called my sponsor and told her, "I'm going out. I'm going to eat cake at the wedding." And that's what I did. And the interesting thing was, this was about 3 weeks before the wedding, and I started eating, and I started gaining weight, obviously, because that's what we do. And although I could fit in the dress, it was starting to get tight. And there's a picture of my son and my husband walking me down the aisle to my seat, and I looked beautiful in this dress. And if you looked at me, you would have thought I had it all together, but I didn't. I'd lost my spiritual connection, and I had lost my my emotional connection. And although I enjoyed the wedding, it wasn't the wedding experience that I had dreamed of because I was in the food. So when I came back, I discovered Vision. There was a friend of mine who had gone to Vision, and she told me about it. And so I got into Vision. I got back into the program. I did the work that my son asked me to do consistently and with intensity. I took a deep dive into the big book, the AA and the OA 12 and 12. And as a result, I was given a specific design for living, including a lesson plan for sponsoring. So what's it like now? This is the something that's different. On page 58, it says, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps." So I want to start by saying, I want to be very transparent and let you know, I do not do this program perfectly. I do my best. I do my best every day. And when I was first invited to do this talk, my first thought was, oh my God, I am going to do the best special edition that they have ever heard. And then my next thought was, I don't have anything to share. Because when I'm in fear, I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. And so I shared it with a fellow who I read the big book with every week, and she said to me, why don't you go through the bedevilments and the ninth and the tenth step promises? And that'll give you like your recovery temperature. And so that's what I did. And on page 52, the bedevilments are trouble with personal relationships, can't control my emotional nature, couldn't make a living, prey to misery and depression, feelings of usefulness, full of fear, unhappy, no real help to others. And I looked at that and I thought, you know what, I don't have that anymore. I'm not experiencing those bedevilments. So then I went on to the Step 9 promises on pages 83 and 84. Know a new freedom and a new happiness. Do not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. Comprehend the word serenity and know peace. My experience can benefit others. I lost interest in selfish things and gained interest in my fellows. Self-seeking has slipped away. My whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed. Fear of people and economic insecurity has left me. Intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. Realize that God is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And those promises have come true for me. They're not true every single day, every single minute, but overall they are true for me. The Step 10 promises on page 84 and 85, pages 84 and 85, have entered the world of the Spirit, growing in understanding and effectiveness. Continually watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When they crop up, I ask God at once to remove them. I discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. I turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Love and tolerance of others is my code. I ceased fighting everyone, anything or anyone, even food. Sanity has returned. Seldom interested in my alcoholic foods. If tempted, recoil from my alcoholic foods is from a hot flame. React sanely and normally, not fighting or avoiding temptation. Placed in a position of neutrality, the problem has been removed. Not cocky or afraid. And these promises have come true for me also. I'm not always sane around food. I'm not always neutral around food. I do have some struggles with that. But I have ceased fighting anyone. And I know that this is a lifelong journey. And I'm glad that it is, because you know what? If it was a one and done, I would be bored and I would move on. And so those struggles that I have with food every once in a while, those thoughts, and sometimes I don't weigh and measure like I'm supposed to. Sometimes I will pop some abstinent food into my mouth when I'm preparing my food. Those things are just reminders to me that I'm a compulsive overeater and I need to do this work. And what I do is I'm honest, I share it with somebody, and thankfully they don't tell me, you need to go back to step one. Because you know what? I kind of feel like if every time I make a mistake, I have to go back to step one. And the point of the program is to share what God has given me with others. And if I'm back at the beginning, just doing all this work on me, I'm not doing what this program is all about. And so I learn from my mistakes and I move on. Step 3, pages 60 and 61, were life-changing for me. When I read about the director, I am a cajoling, sweet, you know, I'll be super nice and you'll do what I want you to do, kind of a director. And of course, that doesn't work. But the main thing was down at the bottom of 61, where it talks about my actions made people want to retaliate against me. When that became a truth for me and I realized that I do that, That was life-changing. And I especially did it with my husband. And it might, you know, I had to get the last word, or I made a face. My face, you know, said it all. And, or I even the way I breathed, you know, was like an attack. And my husband would retaliate against me. And of course he did. And once I stopped doing that, my relationship with my husband has made a 180. And miraculously, I have changed, and I see changes in him too. And it was just as simple as walking away. Don't let the volcano erupt. Just walk away. And in 15 minutes, that feeling that I felt like I had to say this, or I had to make this face, or I had to sigh, or it's gone. And I'm like, you know what? I could have messed up the whole day. I could have messed up the whole week if I just, you know, but I just turned around and walked away. And that's certainly God doing something for me that I couldn't do for myself. Step four, my mom and my husband were the stars of my step fours, and I've done many step fours. And this time I had the epiphany that what my step four was all about before was writing all the stuff down that they did to me and touching on my part and then giving it away and then waiting for them to change. And they never did. And so I felt like this isn't working. So this time I changed. I accepted them for who they were. And again, miraculously, I changed and they changed. And my relationship with them has been healed in so many ways, I can't even express it. Probably the biggest thing for me going through the steps this time was step 6 and 7. I don't even remember doing them before, but we took a really deep dive into step 6 and 7. And I was able to really see what my character defects were. And that came from step 4 and what was my part. A pattern definitely emerged for me. And I could see what my character defects were. And also, as I did my worksheets in steps 6 and 7, I saw how those defects manifested themselves in my life very clearly. And I was given a plan on how to act the opposite way when those defects came up. And my higher power has given me the grace to recognize myself when those character defects are manifesting themselves in my life. And one of the things they had me do is they had me, my sponsor had me create a set of ideals that I can refer to when my emotions want to drive me back into my old ways. So I did a set of ideals for my husband, how I wanted to show up for my husband, in my relationship with my husband, with my kids, with my mother. And just recently, I also did one with how I want to show up with God. And as a result of the ideals with God, it's really helped me to define the God of my understanding. I really struggled with that. The God of my understanding, because I came in with a pre-made God from my childhood, from converting to Catholicism. It was so ingrained in me. The dogma of that God was such a powerful piece of me. I didn't know how to move even deeper into a spiritual relationship, a personal spiritual relationship with God. And writing out these ideals, and also my prayer and meditation piece, which I do, I try and do it every morning. I'm pretty good at it. I give myself a B on that. My meditations are God-focused. They have really helped me to have that personal spiritual relationship. But I'm going to read to you my ideals for my husband. And they are, I want the best, and his name is Rick. I want the best for Rick, for him to feel safe and cherished in our relationship. I want to be my true self and communicate in an honest, kind, and compassionate way. I want to be a partner that does what is needed to build our relationship and not keep score. I want to be a friend to Rick, to be someone he enjoys spending time with. I want to respect our differences and not take his moods personally. I want to have the courage to sit with uncomfortable feelings and take those feelings to God. I want to walk away without anger or resentment when I feel Rick is being rude and harsh. I want to share my physical self with him with a joyful attitude. I want to be present and open to sharing experiences with Rick without fear. I want to know that my self-worth comes from my Creator and isn't dependent on Rick. I want to remind myself daily of the things that I love, cherish, and respect about Rick. I don't want to put Rick down to other people. And I literally, so my husband is a very linear thinker, and if he's in the middle of doing something, and I'm all over the board, pinball thinker, and I'm like, hey, let's do this, and what are you thinking about that? And if he's in the middle of a chore, he can be very harsh. And as soon as that happens, my emotional volcano starts to boil. And before, it would erupt. And now, I go back to my ideals. I walk away, and I read my ideals. And I get to that part where it says, I walk away without anger and resentment. And I don't take what he says personally. And I remember that I wrote these ideals when I was of sound mind, and that I can trust them and I can follow them. And that's what I do. And again, by doing this, we're no longer on offense or defense with each other. We just exist as partners. I don't have any more of the, what if I'd done this in life? What if I'd done that? Maybe if I'd married somebody else. What about that boyfriend I had 30 years ago? I see the gift that God has given me in the man that he chose for me to spend my life with. We've been married almost 40 years. We have 4 children together. We are retiring and riding horses together. I have such a beautiful life, and it is all a part of this program. So I'm going to just wrap up with a couple of just quick bullet points. Willingness plus action equals recovery for me. I was always willing, but I wasn't willing to take action. I just wanted to be zapped into the fourth dimension, and that doesn't happen. It didn't happen for me, let me put it that way. I have to take action. That's what my recovery is all about, the actions that I take. I want to keep changing and growing in this program. And like I said before, if I didn't, I would lose interest. So I want to constantly be seeking what's next, what's new, deepening my relationship with my higher power and my fellows. My fit spiritual condition, I ask myself, what's louder, God or the disease? And if God is louder and I feel that peace, then I know I'm in fit spiritual condition. Recovered is when what I know goes from my head to my heart and becomes a part of me. Everything that came before was meant to be. I have no regrets. And, it talks about in the big book how my experience will help someone else. And I hear sponsees, and I used to say myself, why didn't I get this earlier? Why did I have to do this? Why did I have to do that? And I know now that I had to do each one of those things to be where I am today. And I have to do what I do today so that I can be where I'm supposed to be tomorrow. I have no regrets. I say the St. Francis prayer every morning as part of my prayer and meditation time. And I'm really glad that I do. I do a number of things, the 3rd-step prayer, the 7th-step prayer. I say the rosary. And then I have some personal prayers that I say. But I'll tell you what, when I'm in resentment, and I go back and say that St. Francis prayer, it takes on a whole different meaning for me. Can I take the time to console? Am I willing to understand what you have to say? Is it more important that I'm loving than that I'm being loved? And I'm so glad that I say that prayer every day, because when it hits the road, when the tires hit the pavement, it's in there, it's in my heart. And when I feel that uncomfortableness when I say that prayer, I know I need a 10th step. I pray and meditate, just like I said, every day, so it becomes a part of my working mind. I want to write up my ideals for how I show up for myself. That's the one set of ideals I haven't written yet. I love the instruction on page 13, and I'm going to read it here of the page. And this is such a simple instruction. I sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself, except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. And then I am promised, then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. All I have to do is sit quietly and ask for direction and the strength to do God's will. It's just that simple. I ride horses, like I said, and I did a talk once about the tools and the importance of the tools. And the tools have taken on a whole different meaning. I don't say you're not the boss of me anymore, and I do what I'm supposed to do every day. I give myself a B again. I don't want anybody to think that I'm doing this program perfectly. So here's my analogy. I have a quarter horse. He weighs 1,200 pounds. He's a very good horse. I would never go outside in my pajamas and hop on my horse's back without the tack, a saddle, and a bridle with reins and go for a ride, because the chances are that something very bad would happen. And that's how I look at my tools. And they do take time every day to do my tools. But I know that I'm as close to being as safe as I can possibly be by taking the time to do that. So when I go out to ride my horse, I put on the proper clothes. From my head, which is a helmet, to my feet, which are closed shoes with heels. I take the time to groom my horse properly. I put on a saddle. I cinch him around the middle. I put on a rear cinch. I put on a breast collar, so when I'm going up a steep hill, my saddle with me in it doesn't slide off the back of him. I have reins so that I can steer him. When I'm done, I take the time to take all of his pack off. I groom him, and I put him away. And, you know, the ride part is the part that's just amazing. And I meet my maker every time I get on this horse's back. And it takes a long time to do all the grooming before and after and tacking him up. And it's not the funnest part of the ride, but it's the most important part of the ride to keep me safe so that I can go back out tomorrow and do it again. I want to finish with page 417 in the big book. The story is called, and this is in the fourth edition, Acceptance is the Answer. I'm going to turn off my alarm so it doesn't ding. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me. and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. Thank you, God, for this time. Thank you for being with me and getting me through this. Thank you for the people that are on the line. Thank you for my abstinence, my emotional, my physical, and my spiritual fitness. I pass.
Thank you very, very, very much, Cheryl S. from Nevada. You know, I don't know, but I can certainly say in the most humble way, this was the best presentation ever. Anyway, it was lovely and so easy to follow, and the miracle just continued to quench and rinse my heart with the miracles that abound and the love and the emotion that surrounds that. Thank you so much for that presentation this morning. We are so grateful to be able to have it on our archives. And we're going to make sure that we ask Cheryl S. for her contact information at the conclusion of this meeting. It'll be after the recording has stopped, so stay with us clear to the very last moment so you can get that information from her. The other thing I wanted to mention was the share ID number for today, the Sunday special edition, as well as make a correction. It's just an invert of the first two share ID numbers I gave you for Friday, the 10th of May, and it's actually 21390 for the 7 a.m. and 21391 for the 10 a.m. So if you dial in otherwise when I announced it, you'll be surprised. But if you turn it around, it'll be connected to the right meeting. But this morning, we're just going to keep in mind consecutively the Sunday special edition for May 12, 2024. Share ID number is 21392. So we have 390, 391, and 392. So, Cheryl, here we go. The lines are going to be open for questions. If you have questions for Cheryl, please unmute your phone by pressing star 1 on your phone keypad. Offer your first name and the first letter of your last name and your state. So if folks want to get a hold of you, they can. And then immediately upon asking your question, would you please press star 1 again? So that the lines are nice and quiet and we get your single question out there. So who would like to ask a question this morning? Diana B. in Idaho.
Christina J.
Bonnie B. Hello, you. Who else?
Maura Z.
Hey, Maura. Got you down. You'll be the fourth one in line there. Okay, well, let's not let any time pass by. We have, is it Diana B., Christina J., Bonnie B., and Maura Z., I believe. So first up, your question, if you press star 1, Diana B., we're ready for you. Good morning to you.
Hi. Hi, it's Diane P. in Idaho.
Oh, P., okay.
That's okay. Thank you so much for your show, Cheryl. I needed this morning. I had just started the program about 49 days ago, and then just had a rough week last week emotionally and started picking at little things that weren't on my program and was kind of lying to myself that I was still abstinent. And today I decided, okay, it's day 1 again. So this is absolutely perfect for me. And my question to you, and I think I know the answer, but just want to make sure, was there, do you feel like you needed to have the little bumps in the road, if you will, with your abstinence and ending your abstinence and starting again to finally learn to get to the point where you continued with your abstinence? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that question. Yes, definitely. I wouldn't go back and change a thing. You know, I trust that my higher power has me and knows exactly, you know, what I need and when I need it. So, yeah, And I think back on those, you know, those bumps in the road, and they are just a reminder to me of how sick of a compulsive overeater that I am. But there is hope and there is recovery. I pass.
Thank you for your question this morning, Diana P. from Idaho. Next up, Christina J., your question, please, this morning for Cheryl.
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service. And that was so beautiful because you're so calm. I mean, you are peaceful. And I'd love to know if you were always that way, just calm and serene. And then the second part of my question is that my mother called me yesterday, and my mother's in a home and she's on a lot of opiates. She's been for years. She's very co with my brother, and she's telling me that my brother has a resentment against me from 40 years ago. And I didn't know anything about it. I mean, he never said anything to me. And my gut's in a knot about it, and I'm trying to take it to God, and I'm not sure if it's a resentment. I guess it might be fear-based, like, what did I do? And, you know, and since he didn't tell me, I'm getting this secondhand. I'm wondering what you would do with such a thing. And I probably know the answer, but I would love to hear your perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. Well, I'll just say still waters run deep. I am a calm person, but like I said, I think I was a hyper as a kid. So, but thank you. Whatever calmness I have comes from my higher power, that's for sure. And I prayed with my sponsor before I came on the line today, and we talked about, she prayed about God having his hands on my shoulder. And I love that. And God does have his hands on my shoulders. He also has his hand on my mouth. And I pray that too. God, put your arms around my shoulder and your hand over my mouth. What I would do is I would do a 10 step. And, you know, I have a form that I fill out, and I would fill out that. And I would, I'd share it with another fellow. And then I think I would speak to my sponsor about it and ask her or him, you know, how to go forward, whether or not to get in contact with your brother. And, you know, because of course you don't, and see if you owe an amends. And, you know, if you know what the resentment is and it's true and you did do a harm, then within the parameters of the ninth step, you probably need to make an amends, even though it's 40 years old. And the bottom line is you will be the person that is set free from that. So suffering, I do a 10th step and talk to my sponsor and possibly a ninth step amends. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Christina J. from North Carolina, for your question this morning. Next up, Bonnie B. from Florida, your question. Hey, Bonnie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melody, Cheryl. What a beautiful presentation this morning. Thank you so much. So appreciate your honesty, your transparency, and the phrase, I'm only one meal away from abstinence. Talk about bringing hope to others in the program. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So the question I have for you, my friend, is you talked about templates for your ideals. Do you have a template? I guess you talked about creating ideals. Do you have templates for those, or is that something you just sort of came up with yourself? And thanks again. I'll pass.
It's so good to hear your voice, Bonnie. You have been such an important and inspirational part of my recovery. So I have templates for the sixth and the seventh step. And basically what I did with those, I'm just going to pull up my worksheet right here. Is I went by character defects, by character defects, and how it manifested itself and what I wanted to do differently. But as far as the ideals, I did just write those out. And there is a podcast. And Melanie, can I say the person's name who did the podcast that I want to refer to? Is that
since it's on our recordings and it's public information, you betcha. Thanks for asking.
Okay. So Melissa C. and Janet B. do some wonderful podcasts on relationship ideals. And Melissa C. actually has a like a handout where you can, it gives the pages in the big book for the relationship ideals. And so if you're looking to kind of put that together, I would search out Janet B. and Melissa C. and their talks on relationship ideals. Thanks again, Bonnie, for being such an important part of my recovery. I pass.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much, Bonnie B. from Florida, for your question. Next up is Maura Z. from Virginia, and then right after you, Maura, we're going to open up a line for other questions. But for now, it's your turn for your question. Hey, good to hear you.
Good to hear you, Melanie. Thanks so much for your service. And Cheryl, thank you so much for a very timely special edition for me. I am in relapse, and that's really hard for me to say. My question is, I do best when I have instructions. And so I'm just wondering, what were the specific changes or the steps you took to move from relapse to recovery? How did you stop the cycle?
Well, that's a good question. And I just want to say, first of all, I'll just repeat it, you're only one meal away from abstinence. And we're all here with you. And you know, a lot of times I say, I don't know how you feel, but I do know how you feel. And just the fact that you're on the line this morning gives me so much hope for you. That's for sure. What did I do? You know what? I just got so sick and tired of watching the scale go up. And so the action I took was I looked up meetings. My friend of mine told me about vision, I went, I took the action. I got on the meeting. I got a sponsor. I started immediately working on the steps. And I didn't stop. It was all about the action for me. And even if it's just the next right thing, you know, ask yourself, okay, what am I going to do when I get off the meeting? Am I going to make a phone call? If I have a sponsor, am I going to call my sponsor or text my sponsor? I do a lot of food prep. I have a lot of boundaries around my my abstinence and my program so that it's a routine. And I never thought I liked routine, but I can't live without it now. I did the tools even though I didn't want to. So that's what I did. I just kept taking the next right action and tried to stay busy in it. And I pass. Good luck, Maura. We're here for you.
Amen. Amen. Thank you very much, Maura Z, for your vulnerability and your question this morning. The lines are open for additional questions today. If you'd like to ask Cheryl a question, please give me your first name, the first letter of your last name, and your state. Susan S.
Tony
Virginia. B. Susan S. from Virginia. And I heard a Tony B. Are you from the UK, Scotland?
Okay. Scotland.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Joanne B.
Joanne B.
Suzanne F.
From Joanne.
Ohio.
Suzanne F. Ohio.
Anayeta R. in Texas.
Anayeta. Hello. Texas.
Joanne B. from Vermont.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Got that, backing up there and putting that down. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go with that line up here, too. Let's get started. I'll go with the line up here first so you know where you are. Susan S. from Virginia, Tony B. from Scotland, Joanne B. from Vermont, Suzanne S. from Ohio.
Yeah.
Texas.
Yeah.
Up first. You go, Susan.
That's
like Frank. Okay. Gotcha, Suzanne. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your share. It's really speaking to me. And my question is, about something you just said. You said, I think you have boundaries. Were you saying boundaries around your food plan or boundaries around your food? Could you please elaborate on that if that's appropriate?
Sure. I have boundaries around everything. I have boundaries around my food plan, and I share it with my sponsor. I personally do my nightly review the next morning because I found I'm not a night person, and so I just wanted to get it done, you know, the night before, and I didn't really plan properly. So I do my nightly review the next morning and send my food in the next morning. So my boundaries around my food plan is, number one, that I have one. Number two, that I send it to my sponsor every day. If I'm going to change something, I text my sponsor. What other boundaries? I food prep a lot so that the food is there for me when it's time for me to eat. Because if I go too long and then I have to prepare the meal, that's not good for me. Some of my other boundaries are I don't generally talk to sponsees on the weekend, and I don't usually make outreach calls at night. I save that time for my family, who are very generous and very supportive of my program. Just trying to think if I have any other boundaries around my food plan. I don't think so. You know, the only thing I do is I try and be open and aware of what I'm eating, because some of my abstinent foods can give me trouble at times. And, you know, I try and be open to whether or not I should continue to eat those things. I hope that answers your question, Susan. I pass.
Thank you very much, Susan, from Virginia, with your question this morning. Tony B., your question this morning from Scotland.
Hello, my name's Tony B., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. Thank you so much, Cheryl. That was an absolutely beautiful presentation and so real. I think just absolutely, I love the fact you're giving yourself a B for, you know, the prayer and meditation, and it's just honest. And my question is about sponsorship, and I wondered how you deal with sponsees. So you had the experience yourself of having a sponsor who, you know, when you were relapsing, was saying to you, you know, you don't have to, but she was staying with you. And then, you know, it sounds like now, you know, you might have just a tiny kind of like put a bit of abstinent extra food in your mouth or something. But what I'm wondering is how do you know if they're where you were, you know, I'm just going out now and see you later, or if they're where you are, if you see what I mean, like with how you're eating now. Could you talk on that a bit?
Sure. Well, of course, each sponsee is different. That's what I have learned. And I have also learned that the true meaning of powerlessness is in sponsoring, because, you know, I have what I have to give away, but they have to receive it. So when I first started sponsoring, I was like, you know, because I would get people that would say, I've had a lot of people drop me, and my ego caused me to say, I would never do that. I'm with you till the end. And I regretted that statement at times. But I've had sponsees that go through the steps very quickly, and then I've had sponsees that don't go through the steps very quickly. And I am so grateful for the ones that didn't go through. I'm grateful for all of them, but I'm grateful for the experience of those fancies. One in particular that, you know, in and out and in and out. And but she wanted it. She just wanted it so badly. And we just hung in there. But, where I didn't have the answer, you know, and so I, there were times that I said, you know, I'd heard this podcast or that podcast, why don't you listen to this, or why don't you call that fellow, look up their number, maybe they have the answer to this that I don't have. So I've kind of come to the place now, my sponsoring is evolving just like my program is. As long as a sponsee is willing and is trying to take action or taking action, I'm going to hang in there with you and get through it with you together. And but if they're not trying, you know, then it's it says in the big book, you know, for them and for myself, we have to move on. And I think I pray about it. And I feel like the times that I have separated from a sponsee, it has been very clear to me that that was the right thing to do. You know, I didn't have afterwards like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Maybe I should have stuck with that person. So, but it, and the other thing is, if I'm talking to a sponsee, and because of where we are together, it makes me feel like I want to eat, then I know that that's a problem. And it's probably time to release them lovingly to someone who could help them better than me. I pass.
Thank you very much, Tony B., for your question this morning. Next up is Joanne B. from Vermont, followed by Suzanne. Hi, Joanne B.
Good morning, everybody. This is Joanne B., recovered in Vermont. Cheryl, I really got so much out of your message. It was amazing. And my question is, I've been in this program for about a year and a half. I'm still abstinent. I've maintained my weight loss. I'm sponsoring. I'm doing everything. But I'm still struggling with making that connection, like the morning meditation. Like, how did you build that? And should I just be patient with myself and just keep trying? Or how did you do that? How did you get to a place where you're, it's really an ingrained habit? Thanks.
Thank you for that question. So my sponsor, required, she suggested strongly that I start prayer and meditation from the very beginning. And honestly, I didn't really do it. I didn't really know what to do, which is so ironic from being a, you know, a weekly mass Catholic for years and years and years. But to bring it into my program, I really, really struggled with that. I think for me, it was after I did the 11th step where I really started getting into a routine. And I listened to other people. I mean, I've taken some prayers from other people. People will share prayers sometimes on a meeting, and I've reached out to them and asked them, you know, that prayer. So for me, so I get up early, which I didn't want to do. So I set my alarm for about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I get up. And I say the rosary, and it's, I guess it's part of my need for routine. So I do the rosary. It takes a certain amount of time. I say the third step. I say the prayer of St. Francis, the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer. I have a prayer that somebody gave me about releasing my family to God's care. I have a prayer that I say when I'm crushed. with anxiety or fear. And then I went on to YouTube and looked up, for me, I looked up Christian meditations or guided meditations. I'm sure there's meditations for whatever, you know, if you're a religion, you can, you know, find those. And I listened to those. And they just became a part of my working life. And so I would definitely say, do not give up. Absolutely, positively, do not give up. Find something that you can, you know, a set of prayers that you can say, create a routine. Now, my sponsor's sponsor, she likes to shake it up. And so she will, you know, after she said, as you know, has a routine for a while, she'll switch up the prayers. I know people that record their prayers and then listen to them on the way to work, and that's their prayer and meditation time. So I would just encourage you to just keep seeking what's going to work for you, and use those tools that are available, like YouTube, or, you know, if you have some kind of a devotion that you, you know, you've learned, do those, and just take that time and sit quietly, and but don't give up. For me, it is the most important part of my day, without question, and I pass.
Thank you very much, Joanne B. from Vermont, for your question this morning. Suzanne F. from Ohio, and for your question. Press star one, Suzanne.
Oh, sorry, I thought I was unmuted. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank Cheryl for a wonderful, wonderful lead. And I really got a lot out of it. My question is, you know, in Bill's story, he talks about Ebby bringing him to the spiritual center. I've had several Ebbies in my life because I've been in and out for a lot of 24 hours. And I'm just wondering if you've had any Ebbies in your life.
Yeah, I would say definitely. So the person that brought me into vision or told me about vision, she is certainly was an Ebby to me. And we still are in contact with each other. And she's just on fire for stuff. She's like, oh my gosh, you got to try this new thing, Vision for You. You're not going to believe it. It's amazing. And then she says, you got to go to this great new thing. It's going to change your life. I think the other Ebby I had, so when I came in before, in this three-year period, I made outreach calls to this one particular lady, and we had a lot of things in common, in particular with the horses and that lifestyle. And when I went out, she just kept calling me and, you know, not talking to me about coming back in. She just was like, I just want to keep in touch with you. How are you doing? And, you know, if I would share, you know, I'm miserable, I'm eating, she would say, well, you know, if you want to send me your food, you can. If you don't, you don't have to. You know, I'm not going to be your sponsor. Or, you know, if you want to call and talk about something. And she, you know, she said, I just can't sponsor anybody right now. And you know what? She became my sponsor. And I'm still in contact with her. And here's the thing about the relapse and recovery and the Ebby stuff. She has never gone out. But I actually sponsor some people who have sponsored me in the past, which really brings this program to me, to that equality. You know, we're all on the same road and nobody's above or below anybody else. And somebody that sponsored me 5 years ago, I can turn around and sponsor them today because we just walk hand in hand. So I hope that answers your question. And good luck. Again, we're here for you. So I don't think
thank you very much.
That, but it might have, yeah, might have spoken incorrectly about that.
Thank you very much. Sorry for stepping on your toes there. Thanks, Suzanne F., for your question. She's from Ohio. Next up is Hanayeta R. from Texas. Star one, Hanayeta.
Good morning. I'm sorry. It took me a minute. This is Hanayeta R. from Texas. And I want to thank Cheryl, I think. I just said her name. Anyway, I hope that's your name. My head is just kind of mixed up. But anyway, my question for you is, well, first of all, I have to tell you that I've been ill for quite a while now, a couple of months or so, and have not been able to really work on my step work. And I think that I'm ready to go back, but something keeps pulling me away from it. I just, like, I can't find it on my computer, or I can't, you know, something comes up or my head starts to hurt or whatever. And I just want to know what you think would be a good way to get out of this, a drum, I don't know, this blockage. You know, I feel like something's blocking me from wanting to go on, and it worries me. My new abstinence is like 5 months and 2 weeks. And so very grateful, so very, very grateful. And, you know, because I've been in since 1981, so this time I want to do it right, and I want to do it. So if you have any ideas of how to break this key syndrome that I have right now going on, thank you.
Thank you, Hanayeta. But I want to say your name is beautiful, really a beautiful name. So I would say I would pray. Action, you know. I just had to take action, and nothing else worked but that was to take action. Whether I felt like it or not, and I'm not saying that you're making excuses, because it sounds like you are genuinely struggling physically and emotionally and spiritually. We just do the next right thing. And I learned to act as if, and I know some people don't necessarily agree with that, but you know, there's so many little sayings around it. Suit up and show up. Easy does it. Just do it. You just have to take the action to do it, because it's not about, you know, my husband taught me, my husband is a very chore oriented person. I am not. And years ago, he said to me, you just have to love to learn. You have to learn to love your chores. Find something about them that gives you pleasure and do them. And that's how I work the program. I don't always want to do it. You know, in fact, my mind goes the complete opposite. I don't know why, you know, even though it makes me feel so good when I do it. But my first thought about everything is nope, can't do that. Not going to do that. And what gets me through is just doing it. And it doesn't have anything to do with how I feel. It's just doing it. And I pass.
Thank you very much, Hanayeta R. from Texas, for your questions this morning. Also, Cheryl, just thank you very much for this extended time of heartfelt support, you know, for the questions that are coming in today, and your experience with those kinds of things. It just is clear in your presentation, you know, the path that you've been on, the spiritual path that you're on, and it's just absolutely delightful. Thank you for your presentation today. We're so grateful to be able to have it as part of the archives here for folks to go back and listen to. And so that, because of the time, is the last question that we'll be able to take today.
our time came to a quick end with you today. It's almost sad to think it's going to go away for now anyway, but it's always recorded in infamy. So thank you again for offering so much, and it's time to close with our traditional way that we always close our meeting here at A Vision for You by reading from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. Key to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you'll surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.